You want me to start?
Yes, I want you to start.
Hello and welcome to episode 50 of the Right Dishonourable podcast, Brexit special, I suppose.
Happy 50th.
Happy 50th. Jazza is ecstatic, as you can hear from his voice. I'm Jimmy Nichols, as per usual, and we are joined this week by John to discuss...
Hello.
I'm not sure I'm here to discuss so much as...
To stop me from killing.
Prevent bloodshed. I'm kind of a moderator.
So shall we say how we voted, in case you haven't noticed over the several episodes that
so we've got? So you voted Leave, didn't you, Jazza?
Very funny. I voted to remain, and frankly I'm devastated and worried about the future of my country that I no longer feel like I'm a part of. How did you vote, Jimmy?
I voted Leave.
Great, really good for you. John, how did you leave?
How did you vote? I voted Remain, but I'm actually fairly optimistic in a way this weekend, and I'll explain why later.
Great. Anyway, music, and we usually do three topics, don't we?
We usually do three
topics. But we are just going to talk about the fact that... our country's fucked. Here's the music.
Jazz is not biased.
Not at all.
Not biased.
No, this isn't the fucking BBC. They can go to bloomin' Andrew Marr if they want balance. Fuck off.
Right, so Jimmy, as the only one out of the three of us who did vote Leave... Why did you vote Leave?
The reasons that I gave last week's episode were essentially that I don't think the EU is democratically accountable. Me and Jazza actually had a deeper discussion about that after the podcast. But I don't think the way it's set up really works to the benefit certainly of people at the bottom of the food chain, if you like. I don't think it's responsive to public will. And I think that's inherent in the way it's set up. And I didn't see any prospect for that changing in the near future.
I mean, I think that's... A lot of people, I think, even who voted Remain would probably agree with that idea.
A lot of people in our kind of class of people, if you like, a lot of our peers, I don't know anyone of our group who voted Leave. All of them voted Remain. And when I put this to them, none of them really disagreed, except Jazza, interestingly. But
No, I didn't disagree. Look, I do think that the EU... should be and could be more visible and democratic.
Yeah, but you compared it on equal terms to Westminster.
Yeah, and I would still maintain that the EU is not less democratic than the system we have at our country level.
I think it is. You could say they're equally bad structurally. I don't happen to think that's true, but even if you did say that, it's indisputable that there is more of a British political culture and of holding politicians to account for the stuff that they do than there is a European culture.
Well, I mean, actually, one thing you said to me, which I thought was almost uncharacteristically very left-wing of you, was you sort of suggested that you thought Europe's... the EU served the elites more than it served anybody else.
Yeah, it does. I mean... The one thing that you find if you break down how the European referendum vote went is that poor people disproportionately voted for Leave, rich people disproportionately voted for Remain. I think that is suggestive.
Isn't that not because our own Westminster politics is itself very preferable to people who've got more money?
Yeah, I mean, in any...
And those people feel disengaged with any kind of official politic.
Yeah, but actually, no, really. Yeah, but no. I mean, yes, in the sense that the poorer people feel disengaged from the idea of Europeanness. But poorer people do not feel disengaged from the idea of being British. In fact, you have the opposite effect of people who are in a more vulnerable position economically.
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is that... something that has really... I've done a lot of thinking... after the vote. Great. basically, the problem we have here is the fact that there is a large portion of English lower class people, older voters, who do not feel like their voices are heard by their politicians, by their MPs or their MEP or whoever.
Yeah.
The reason that this exists, and I do profoundly believe this, is because of our voting system. Because somebody can go into a constituency that is seen as very safe Labour or Tory, and then they never really have to work again in order
But actually, that scepticism is reflected in the European countries that have far more proportional voting systems than we do.
So, well, this is the argument that I'm making. I'm not sure I'm on the same page as you there. But I think that because we have MPs who haven't had to work for it, who haven't had to be from the places that they represent, and actually like look like, sound like, share the same views as their constituents, I think that that's been a huge problem because, well, we've seen it with the vote. It was something like 70-80% of MPs wanted to stay in, maybe.
Yeah, it's high. Yeah.
And we ended up being split down the middle.
So Bernie Sanders was asked about this, I think on Good Morning America or something.
The former US Democratic.
Yeah, and
I think he's technically still in the race.
He's still in the race.
And while he said he wasn't really interested in getting into the politics of it, something he did point out, which he said had parallels in America, was that people on a working class level weren't very interested in the idea of a global economy and a globalized culture, and that you know, because of misunderstandings or because it didn't serve them very well, and because of the capitalist systems that tend to serve elites, made them want to rebel against, you know, unifications like the EU, which I thought was a very interesting point, because I think that probably does factor into this quite heavily.
Yeah, well, in general terms, actually, I'm not even sure anymore, but I think the EU and the globalisation of finance and that sort of thing has suited large corporations and suited rich people far better than it suited poor people.
Yeah, but we've also never been richer as a society.
Yeah, in absolute terms, yeah, that's definitely true. But the thing is that a lot of people's happiness is really predicated on how they view their position in relation to other people and not in absolute terms.
Are you happy that League won?
Yeah, I think it was the correct decision.
So how do you justify that for people who are paid in pounds and have seen their wages internationally drop by, like, 10-15%, I think it was. It's corrected slightly.
But yeah, it has corrected slightly.
It was initial massive drop. There was a huge... We've been downgraded by Moody's, which obviously carries however much weight nowadays.
Moody's is a ratings agency for government bonds.
Yeah. Can we check... Can we clarify, though? Was it... because I looked into this. Was it an absolute downgrade, or was it a downgrade in terms of outlook? Because what I read was it was a downgrade in terms of outlook, which is slightly different to a proper downgrade.
Yeah, it's a downgrade on outlook.
Right. Okay.
But basically it means that somebody who's looking to invest into the UK sees an uncertain future.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And because of the way that Brexit is going to be carried out now.
So your broader question is the economic uncertainty and damage worth the change, if you like?
At the moment, yes. I'll come on to culture later.
I would say yes, but then it really depends if you follow me on the democratic front. If you think that there was no democratic deficit or it was reformable, then obviously my argument doesn't make any sense whatsoever, because there's been unquestionable economic damage.
Do you think we're going to be a weaker country?
No, because I never really followed the argument that our voice is amplified in Europe, because I think in many respects European politics doesn't follow along the same lines as British interests. So, I mean, what argument that has been
does
made?
Does it really? When, like, I don't want to get into the pros and cons of being in Europe, because we voted to leave.
Yes,
but when the vast majority of the time, the policies that are proposed by the Commission are things that are in line with the British representative there. How is that the case?
Are you talking about sort of the minute regulations of various industries and that sort of thing?
I'm talking about policies that are proposed by the Commission that then get voted on in European Parliament to become legislation across Europe.
I'm talking about the general instincts of Britain are not in line with the EU, I don't think.
You mean gradual integration into a European state?
That would certainly be one of them, yes.
Do you think that that's really going to happen now?
Certainly not now that we're leaving.
No, with the rest of Europe.
In certain ways, it certainly will. They have to do something to fix the euro, and that will involve integration on a fiscal level at some point. That's the only way they can fix it. Otherwise, they should abandon it. They shouldn't leave it as the status quo, because that's the worst of both worlds.
Speaking about democracy, do you think that it's right that Scotland are seeking a second referendum?
I think it's stupid of them to seek a second referendum until it becomes clearer what the deal for Britain is going to be.
And I believe that Nicola Sturgeon has said that it's on the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. She didn't say there will be another referendum. She said it's on the table again, which is a reasonable position.
And I think that she would
position.
Probably agree with you there.
I think her plan, actually, is to approach Brussels directly.
So that they never leave the EU.
Yeah, try and get a bypass deal, if mm-hmm. you like.
I think she said as much.
I think she said, yeah, I think she said it earlier on the Andrew Marr show.
Mm-hmm.
She's made some sort of statement to that effect. Well, that's what's generally believed at the moment. That makes sense from her own political perspective. I think it would still be a bad move for Scotland, because I don't think there'll be a mass appetite to adopt the euro, which will definitely be on the table as one of the
obviously this is very reactive, but polls have surged to 60% in favour of independence.
Yeah, but there's a massive question over what independence really looks like.
Similar to Brexit, really, doesn't it?
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't think that we have absolutely no idea what a UK outside of the EU is going to look like. We have no idea how laws are going to be carried over. We have no idea who's going to be leading our country. Conservative Party of 150,000 members or something is going to be choosing our next Prime Minister.
Yes.
How's that democratic?
You just threw two different questions at me. So in terms of Scotland's
position... Feel free to answer both or neither if you like.
Scotland's position is more precarious than Britain's position because Scotland is now caught between Brussels and London, particularly on, just to take the monetary example, it makes far more sense for Scotland to keep the pound because its biggest trading partner will probably end up being the rump of the UK. Assuming that it leaves, it's going to be more closely integrated with the rest of the UK. It therefore makes a whole lot more sense that it cleaves to the UK, but
sure,
it's going to be
pulled towards
Brussels.
Sure, but voters
clearly
don't listen to all of the economic arguments, and I think that this has really cemented the fact that we are... This is the thing that terrifies me, the fact that we're such a divided country, and that, yet again, when you look at that electoral map, Scotland has such a different appetite to the rest of England.
It's not such a difference. I mean, it's what? They voted 60-40.
62-38, yeah.
Yeah, 60-40, and then Britain voted...
The largest split outside in
voted
the UK
roughly,
outside
roughly 50-50. This is not a huge difference, really. And in terms of their general social attitudes, in the British Attitude Service, Scotland are very similar to England in many ways. It's a good narrative, it does make sense in some ways, but it's not really as true as the media want you to think it's true, or are making out to it.
So do you think that there's going to be another Scottish referendum? And then secondly, do you think that it is going to become... That it will mean that Scotland will become an independent state and the head's going
to
be locked off our country?
I'm not really sure at this point. I mean, obviously Nicola Sturgeon isn't sure because she's not sure what deal she's going to get from Brussels. Mm-hmm. And depending on the deal she gets, she doesn't know that that's going to be a great sell to Scottish people, especially once people have calmed down in the immediate aftermath of what
to
happened.
To be fair, isn't it somewhat of an inevitability that they will one day become an independent state? Because nobody I've talked to, Scottish, English, from all different political persuasions, nobody I've talked to believes that one day they won't be independent. And
people have said the same thing about Quebec. Well, said the same thing about Quebec when they had two referenda in 5 years, I believe. And now the call for Quebecois independence has definitely died down. There was the possibility of the sense of nationalism, the need for nationalism in Scotland to die down, I think. And these are terrible circumstances for that kind of question to be asked again. I think that the question being asked for a referendum on the UK's membership of the EU was a huge error on Cameron's part, especially because he's bloody lost his job now, hasn't he? But because we are just at the tail end of one of the worst recessions in modern history, loads of people still haven't had trickle-down economics, if you will, or won't, but none of that, not very much of that wealth that we have seen has ended up going to the poorest parts of our society, especially in England.
Yes.
I mean, his hands were largely tied, though, weren't they? He had to...
Well, he didn't expect to win a majority last
year.
Yeah,
I think...
And he didn't think he'd have to follow through with the...
Well, realistically, I think he probably would have lost the referendum had he not promised... election had he not promised a referendum. I think looking back on it, a lot of people probably would have swayed, despite how much they didn't like him, they would have swayed towards Miliband had Cameron not...
I'm not sure I buy that argument. I mean, a lot of the damage that UKIP did to Labour in the last general election was... Sorry, a lot of the damage UKIP did to the major parties in the last election was to Labour rather than the Conservatives.
I think that would have changed if there hadn't been a referendum on the table from either of the main parties. I think people would have settled more for Labour.
I don't know, though. I mean,
rather than protest.
The main British political parties have been largely ignoring like a general desire for a referendum for a very, very long time. I mean, I was actually looking at the historic polling from YouGov as to the appetite for Britain to leave the EU, and it was actually much higher before Cameron called the referendum than it has been during the campaign. So
I also supported an EU referendum
at the time that it was called.
No, not at the time that it was called. I supported an EU referendum in the same way that I think Nick Clegg used to talk about it, when there was the change in our relationship with the EU once again.
So treaty change.
Yeah, and then you could take that treaty change to the British
Parliament. That was legislated for, though, wasn't it?
I don't know. I'm not aware.
I'm fairly confident that was legislated for. Did you support a referendum on that treaty or a referendum on membership of the EU on the basis of that treaty?
The second one.
Okay.
I want to try and stop talking about the ifs and buts of the past, because we have a reality that we're dealing with at the moment. And I want to ask you something else, Jimmy, about the different regions and the splits across the UK that we had. Scotland, emphatically, were very much for Remain. London was also largely a Remain vote, both of them getting about 60-40 in favour of staying in the EU. Northern Ireland also voted, to a lesser extent, but also voted majority to Remain.
55-45.
Just what I was going to ask.
Are you as worried as I am about the renewed calls from Sinn Féin for a call for a united Ireland?
No, not really.
Do you understand the implications of that, and that the troubles are only less than 20 years ago?
I understand the in loose terms, the history of the troubles. I just don't think it's a particularly serious call, to be honest, and I think it will be ignored.
If this is going to be... So I can see Sinn Féin picking this up, and... I am so... Obviously, we don't know yet, but I am so worried that there's going to be renewed tensions.
Well, to be fair, Sinn Féin's calls for a referendum on whether there should be a reintegration into Ireland of Northern Ireland have already been rejected by...
Theresa Villiers, the Northern Ireland Secretary.
Yeah. That's the one.
And also the First Minister of Northern Ireland.
And actually, in mainland Ireland, I only know this on an anecdotal level, because my girlfriend's Irish. There is actually an increasing sort of ill feeling towards Sinn Féin, because education has slightly shifted, and they're tending to look now at Sinn Féin as causing a lot of unnecessary loss of life, regardless of nationalism and things that people have been in support of in a broadly political stance for years. So it worries me, because I think it should worry people, and people should think very hard about it. I'm not sure whether anything will necessarily come of it, but I do think it's something that needs to be treated with a lot of consideration and care, because I think you're right. There is, there's been a lot of talk about how Sinn Féin are using this as an opportunity. I think undoubtedly they will, and I think we're going to start to see that in the coming weeks and months. Whether anything will come of it, I very much doubt, but I do think it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much on the same page as John. There's a chance that it could cause problems, but in the scheme of things, the Northern Ireland situation is not going to be that important in Westminster. They're going to have so much more to think about.
I think that that's a travesty, though. The fact that we're now going to be distracted by two leadership elections and probably a new... another general election not too far after.
I think that's definitely
on the cards. I think that we're going to continue to be distracted by that, and that allows for stuff like Northern Ireland to flare up.
Well, I think you're right. I think we're going to spend a year now in terms of the politics of Westminster focusing on... There's almost no way in my mind that a general election won't be called when whoever replaces Cameron replaces Cameron. And let's face it, it's going to be Boris Johnson.
Odds on it's going to be Boris Johnson.
But nobody wants
to
be...
Yeah, odds on that we were going to remain in the EU.
Basically, though, whoever does replace Cameron, nobody wants to be Gordon Brown number two. Like, nobody wants to be an unelected prime minister because it looks bad, it sounds bad, it's undemocratic. I think whoever replaces Cameron will have to call a general election. I know Cameron said he's going to wait until October. I don't think he will. And I can totally see a general election being called before that with a prospective prime ministerial candidate for the Conservative Party.
It depends how fast they elect a new leader, really, as to what the timetable for an election is.
Yeah, but it would make sense in terms of a opportunity, because Labour is now in complete disarray.
There's something I want to talk about before we go on the new leadership elections that are going to be happening in the two major parties. There is specifically the fact that there's been key members of the Leave campaign who have basically gone back on implications and promises that were made during the campaign. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the fact that £350 million was going to go directly to the NHS.
Yep,
the fact that there is going to be more control over immigration. Both of those have been disavowed by Nigel Farage, who, to be fair, wasn't part of the official campaign, but was very happy to tout the £350 million mm-hmm. to our NHS yep. byline that they had. And also Daniel Hannan, who
is a Conservative MEP.
Is a Conservative MEP. He said that it's ridiculous if people think that we're going to have less migration. We will just have more control over it. How do you feel about that? Do you think that
did he phrase it that way? Because I thought he said that we weren't going to radically reduce migration, but we would have more control over it.
I feel like that's exactly what I said.
Well, in terms of looking at...
Oh, you said we definitely wouldn't have less,
yes.
But full stop less. I mean, what I got from his video is that we would have less migration, but it wouldn't necessarily be much less.
What I meant to imply was what you said.
Right, okay.
Do you think that if these things had been... If the Leave campaign had been more candid, frankly, and not lied... I'm going to put it out there.
Oh, both sides lied.
Both sides lied, but a lot of people made a huge decision that is going to change our country forever, or at least for the foreseeable future. Do you think that people would have still made those decisions had they known the truth? That there wasn't really a plan. Nothing's going to be allocated. There was no manifesto for Leave. When Scotland had their independence referendum in 2014, there was a comprehensive white paper of what an independent Scotland would look like.
Yeah, the difference is that in Scotland's case, you have an SNP... You have the SNP who control most of the political machinery in Scotland, who are campaigning on a united front as a party for Scotland to become independent, and therefore can reasonably commit to a manifesto
mm-hmm.
prior to independence. But in the case of the EU, people campaigning for Leave were not part of the same party.
But these pledges were the closest that people have in terms of what the country is going to look like afterwards. £350 million a week to the NHS, that's enough to build a hospital.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting, although you can't break down, obviously, the figures of who's watching these videos, but Farage sort of admitting on ITV that essentially he had lied trended hugely on Twitter.
Mm. Not that means fucking Twitter nothing. I'm so over stuff trending.
Well, the dislikes for that video went through the roof as well, and I think a lot of people be angry.
No,
about
mate, it's all butthurt Remainers.
I'm not sure that's true. I really don't think that's true. I think a lot of Leavers probably did believe that 300...
A lot of them were also under the impression that David Cameron wasn't going to leave his position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all of this stuff that we were told was going to happen or wasn't going to happen is now...
Yeah, but David Cameron said that he'd go to the EU and he'd get a substantial deal, and he didn't. So... And he also said...
Pitching the deal that he got.
If I didn't get the deal that I wanted, I'd campaign to leave, which was a lie.
Yeah, you could argue that was the deal that he wanted.
No way that he was ever going to
look
leave.
At this from a different tact. So I was talking to Maureen Freely this week, who's like the president of English Pen, which is a NGO basically set up to deal with censorship and free speech issues. She said that the thing that troubled her most about Leave was that it was a campaign predicated on censorship, And I asked her to expand on this point because I thought it was interesting. She said, when you think about the phrase Project Fear and how it was deployed throughout the Leave campaign, it turned into an effective shut-up for anything that came out of Remain in terms of studies, think tanks. Any opinions, really, got shut down fairly immediately by this is all just
It was a Fear. Terribly run campaign by Remain.
Yeah, no, I mean, it
and
was...
And it was Project Fear, and I was embarrassed by that.
Well, it was, but also... You kind of almost politically have to take your hat off to whoever came up with the phrase Project Fear. It did end up turning into a censorship.
I think it comes from the Scottish independence referendum. Mm-hmm. Can't remember who coined it.
What was hugely different, and I think probably one of the reasons that Scotland voted to remain so much more than England did, is because they had a very distinct voice from the main campaign up there through the SNP, who were making a very positive case for stuff like migration and the single market. Whereas that was meant to be what Labour did, and I completely hold Jeremy Corbyn's lack of ability to lead his party as one of the reasons that the inner city areas where there's particularly poor people who chose to vote Remain, who chose to vote Leave, why they weren't swayed to the other side. It's because Labour was incompetent.
Well, let's get into this for a moment, because actually this is, when I said earlier I'm oddly, if you like, optimistic about things, this is kind of where I'm coming from. I think for years and years and years, the left have had a problem that they've... And I say this as like a... I've never voted anything but left, whether that's been Lib Dem or Labour.
I can confirm John is left-wing.
I'm a very left-wing guy.
I think that we could probably find a load of clips that also confirm that with your contributions to the podcast.
But we've had a serious problem for, you know, at least a decade, in that we have ignored rural working-class people. And it's not just in an economic sense, it's on a cultural level. There has been a kind of snobbishness that the left have been guilty of in an intellectual sense and a cultural sense.
Because they've taken them for granted.
It's not just that, though. It's also taking for granted that there's been a very insular politics that has gone on, even on things like social media. You look at terms like privilege, for example. Privilege is a difficult concept for some intelligent people to get their heads around. What chance have you got to get people from low education backgrounds whose lives on a day-to-day basis just don't face those kind of realities where they, I suppose, almost can think about those things?
Is your argument roughly that the certain sections of the left have disappeared up their own arse?
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, that's a beautiful way of putting it. But you say certain sections. I think largely the left as a whole has. I think we have left a lot of people behind and chosen to go forward as a kind of insular politics. Jeremy Corbyn, for whatever I think about him in terms of him as a politician, and I actually quite like the way he conducts himself, but put that to one side, he is a perfect example of the insular politics of the left. He is not really, when you think about the broader canvas of Great Britain, a good choice as a leader. He's a fantastic choice to people who want to sit around, talk about, intellectually stimulating left ideals, and who don't really care about anybody who might struggle to get their head around those.
So he's a politico's politician.
Yeah, he is a sort of the epitome of cosmopolitan culture, which, let's face it, hasn't extended out into real.
As somebody who counts themselves as cosmopolitan, I really despise you for making that analogy.
I also, in a weird way, he's a, like a fucking old trot, isn't he? He's not like a metropolitan guy like Chakramuna.
You say that, but look at, and I know they're two massive extremes. Look at the difference between whenever you see him on TV versus whenever you see Nigel Farage on TV. Nigel Farage is almost always seen with a pint in his hand.
Yep.
I have quite a number of times seen Jeremy Corbyn sitting in a fucking cafe with a flat white.
Okay.
Like, on the news. Do you know what I mean?
It's basically a fucking cafe latte. This is the problem.
No, but this is what I mean. People aren't going to... That's emblematic of the problem of representation, I suppose, is we on the left have kind of forgotten that, some people struggle to get their heads around what we take for granted. And we can't just sort of move forward and go, oh, well, fuck them, and you know, they're
so
backwards.
So this is why I rabbit on about having a different voting system, because Labour politicians who are metropolitan and don't necessarily represent, for goodness sake, Ed Miliband doesn't represent fucking Doncaster, does he? Christ's sake. And if there is a space for people like you and I who are liberal, socially progressive, speaking for myself, fiscally more conservative, but you... like, there would be a space for us to be authentically ourselves in politics if we had some kind of proportionate representation. But they have to pretend to be everything to all men. And the idea that Ed Miliband, who went to... what was that? What's the school that he went to? It's like the left-wing Eton, is what it's called. Yeah. This inner-city London
school. Is it that grammar school?
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that even the smallest iota of an idea that he can empathise and understand what a... working class person from Doncaster is going through when he's seen his livelihood and his local town change beyond any kind of recognition is absolutely farcical. And that's why safe seats are the worst thing to ever happen to liberal democracies, because it means that somebody doesn't have to... And that's what happened in Scotland with the SNP. Nobody, Labour took the Scottish vote for complete granted. And the SNP are now going to drag.
But you see, isn't the problem a bit more? I mean, I suppose this doesn't disagree with what you said, but it does kind of disagree with what John said.
Right.
In the sense that a lot of people in the wake of the result have said that, the left needs to work harder on. Quote, educating people about the benefits of migration.
Which is in itself a bit arrogant.
It is a bit talking down to people, but I think the problem is far more profound in the sense that there are a lot of people in this country that don't want migration, and it's not that they don't understand it from a theoretical point of view. They just fundamentally don't want it. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge problem for the
left.
But
you see, now I kind of agree with you. This is why I feel a certain sense of optimism.
I admire this.
On Friday, I've recently kind of quit Facebook. I basically only use it to message my girlfriend now. But on
me every now and again to say, Jazza, I think that you're being quite fascist in the way that you're. You should read this article from Owen Jones, way of riling me up. I wanted to hit you through the fucking messenger.
But this is. Kind of, on Friday, I really feared going on Facebook to message my girlfriend, because I thought, oh, I'm going to...
You know that texts exist, Mike.
Yeah, she's in Ireland, so it's cheaper to... I could use WhatsApp, don't have WhatsApp, that's my bad.
This is fascinating for us.
I really feared what I was going to see, because I have a predominantly working class family. Outside of my sort of immediate nuclear family, basically everybody is either rural or working class, and I'm pretty sure, I haven't done a survey, but I'm pretty sure all of them voted Leave. And
what is it you actually saw?
I was really scared that everybody was going to be slagging off the working class and saying, you know, they've fucked our country and whatever.
Oh, you mean people of our generation?
Yeah, yeah, right. Like left-wing Remainers were going to be slagging off the working class, and true enough, a lot of them were. But amongst an ocean of fuck the working class, they've ruined my country, I hate them, burn them all of this kind of stuff, there were people who said, you know what, this shows that we need to re-engage, this shows that we need to take a look at ourselves and understand what it is about left-wing politics that no longer speaks to the people who it is most
Can I insert a vomit emoji here? Because fuck... off.
I mean, also,
I don't think that anybody was talking about... Well, I wasn't aware of anybody talking about the working class as the people who they resented. I think that there's an awful lot of justifiable anger in the younger vote who are being pulled out of Europe by an older generation who are more xenophobic, who pine for a country that no longer exists and a world that has changed vastly since the 70s and the 60s when they were young, and I think that's where a lot of the anger is. That's certainly a lot of where my anger
But you say, for example, you say,
you say
xenophobia, isn't that a fairly easy thing to pick on? Because
no, that's what it is. That's exactly why the majority of people
Obviously. I think that's kind of hard to prove to a degree, because I'm not saying xenophobia wasn't a big part of this. But I actually think this might have a lot more to do with... So, like, looking at the Island Kurdi thing last year, suddenly everybody started caring.
So the young Syrian child,
suddenly everybody started caring about Syrian migrants when they saw it.
Lasted about a week, though.
Well, yeah, yeah. But my point being that I think for the reason suddenly people were shocked into that is because the reality of people's lives is on a day-to-day basis. Most of the time, they are worried about their own family, people they know, people they love, people they care about, and how their lives are affected on a day-to-day basis. Now, it's as Jeremy Corbyn admitted, there are extraordinary pressures through immigration on the working class and on towns, cities, councils, in terms of funding. Now, that's a problem that the government has created.
But the people who are more likely to vote Brexit are people who are in the whitest parts of the country, who believe that council houses are being taken away from them, when they're in places where the majority of the immigrant population isn't. In places where we are in contact with immigrants every single day and we see hard-working, integrated people, then we're like, you know what, these guys are all right. London voted 60% to stay in.
Isn't that partly because many of the voters in London were sons and daughters of former migrants?
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. Well, that doesn't take away how British they are.
No, I'm not disputing that. I'm saying that you're...
Although Birmingham, with what the largest like Pakistani population in the UK, voted to leave.
My point is, when you say
that the majority of people are voting from predominantly white places, you're forgetting that there's a sampling problem there. Which is that if you, for instance, I think it's reasonable to assume that, well, maybe this is a bit of assumption, but a lot of the people that used to live in the white working class that used to live in the East End moved out to Essex, which I'm fairly sure voted Leave.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact
like hugely.
But the fact that they no longer
Berwick was like the second.
The fact they no longer live in London means that they cannot contribute to the London vote. So the fact that London is multicultural diverse means that a lot of the non-white people voted to remain. And your thesis is that contact with the sons and daughters of migrants and ethnic minorities and white people means that white people are more inclined to vote to remain. That may be true in some sense, but you're also forgetting the sampling error inherent in that.
What about places like Hull and Sheffield and Newcastle?
Yeah, as you said yourself, what about Birmingham, where there is a very large sort of Indian Asian contingent?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's still voted to leave. And like going to university near there, I know that it is in general that area of the world is quite ethnic.
So I'm speaking like quite anecdotally from my own experience, because I have come from a family that ended up middle class but started off very working class. Uh-huh. Granddad is one of those people that moved out of the East End into Essex.
Yeah.
Hugely, hugely xenophobic, and it's frankly the most embarrassing thing about my family. Like, I'm genuinely ashamed at my grandparents' and my uncle's attitude towards people of different cultures, to the point where I'm terrified of introducing them to my boyfriend who comes from a Malaysia background. Mm. And I see that in so many white, now middle-class conversations about migrants. It's like, oh, you're fine, though, because you're the right kind of migrant, because you work hard. The idea that migrants, that people who come into this country aren't working, that they're shirking off of the systems that we have in place in this country, is absolutely fucking ludicrous. And it's because they've had that poison in the way that James O'Brien talked about it on his radio show. Poison, drip, 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 because they're the most easily scapegoatable.
Sure, yeah, equally the left denies that there are valid reasons for opposing migration other than xenophobia. I mean, in fact, you've actually just done it right now, whereas there's tons and tons of research that would support a case for limited migration.
What?
As in this...
No, I just didn't understand what you just said.
Oh, sorry. You said, like, James O'Brien, yeah, fair enough, drip, 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 mm-hmm. poison for the anti-immigration idea, but the left has also played a part in this in denying that there is a problem with migration, and that also that there is a reasonable case to be made to limit migration.
I disagree with that. I see Labour MPs pretending to believe that migration needs to be reduced all the time, and it's cringeworthy. because they feel like they have to appease a vote.
That doesn't disagree with my point. I mean, fundamentally, a lot of MPs who say, "Oh yeah, we hear your concerns about migration. We're hearing them, then we're ignoring them. Mm-hmm. We don't find them interesting at all."
I understand why people, especially
which is why
class,
the voting system needs to be more representative, so that those views can actually be represented in our government.
Okay, so, but
even though I disagree with them, somebody who votes UKIP should have their voice represented in the highest.
So if they should have it represented in the highest parliament, shouldn't those people have their voice represented in the EU vote as well? To go back to your point, yeah, about you being really angry about all the people that voted against you who were older.
I know that we lost.
Okay.
But that genuinely makes me feel like what is this country that I grew up in?
No, but you see, this is where we.
I don't feel part of. So my identity as an Englishman has always been quite crumbly.
Hmm.
I feel no affinity with England right now. I always describe myself as British. As soon as Scotland gets locked off, Northern Ireland gets seceded, where is the country that I grew up in? This is why I'm so sad about it, because what I know is just being ripped away in front of me, and I find that so sad.
If we voted narrowly to remain, would you feel the same way? Because the country would still be roughly equally divided.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel the same way, because it would have gone my way.
Hmm. But that's an interesting paradox.
But you see, that
roughly the same weight of opinion.
Because my country isn't changing into something that I don't identify with.
But to be fair, and this is what I kind of think, although it's really sad that we have voted to leave. If we voted to remain, we would still ignore this problem. And I take your points about xenophobia, but I do genuinely think if you're a working class. So the stereotypical thing is working class builders, painters, etc., moaning about Polish people or whatever coming over and nicking their jobs. Because the reality of it is, and I know this on a personal level, the reality of it is a lot of working class people who work on building sites, blah blah blah, they're getting paid cash in hand because they can't really afford to pay the taxes. Because they're earning so low anyway, and of course people come in from say the European Union or other places, manage to undercut them wage wise. Suddenly they lose out their contracts and jobs.
But that's the case for a higher minimum wage. That is not a case for don't let
and
broaden the marketplace. It was not so long ago that we used to have people say that all of those jokes about how builders used to overcharge you and builders used to do a terrible job and mm-hmm. plumbers would come over and not do the job properly, so you had to ask them back. As soon as we, and I don't think that there's a mistake here, I've done none of the research, obviously. I'm not a social scientist. But the fact that that vernacular has, and that trope in comedy has collapsed, because now actually building services and people who fix our plumbing and people who not build our conservatory now have to do a better job because there is a wider market, because people from largely Poland is where the majority of that kind of labour came in and started offering a better deal. And now I'm just worried that any renovations I want to make to my flat are now going to be ridiculous.
Well, if that's the main reason, then we should definitely vote for Remain then.
I know. I'm glad that you agree. But do you understand my argument?
Your argument is essentially the same as
if people are being paid less than the minimum wage to the point where they can't afford to live, and the fact their quality of life goes down, that does not. If immigrants are undercutting them, that to me isn't a problem with the immigrant, because the immigrant is making sure that
your proposal of a minimum wage is stupid for two reasons. One is that the minimum wage is not an infinitely flexible policy. Once you start raising it above a certain level, people will start losing their jobs. Secondly, there's an enforcement problem in John even just said people pay builders cash in hand, widely known, easily floutable as a rule. It's easy to plow out the minimum wage
taking a step back from what you've said, you're already doing what a lot of you, Jazza, are already doing a lot of what left-wing people won't do, which is...
I'm not left-wing.
Okay, all right. But you're... Okay, well, I'm saying what a lot of left-wing people won't do, which
you may call me a liberal,
You are.
You describe yourself as liberal left the other week.
You are being empathetic already towards these working class people instead of just writing them off as xenophobes. That is something that
The people specifically that I'm calling xenophobes are older people.
Yeah. No, but do you see what I mean? You're already doing something that for years and years and years the left have not been doing. So you're already ahead of the game in that sense.
Oh, excellent.
But this is kind of why I really hope something good comes out of this, because I want more people to think like you, in the sense that I want people to be more empathetic and understand.
You managed to make me smile in this podcast.
I'm sick and tired of just hearing the working class being written off by the, you know, let's remember that the left wing in this country for the past 60 years has, you know, at least for the past 60 years, has had a design towards serving working class people. They were supporting miners when Thatcher was around. They're always banging on about the NHS and welfare state and things like this. And yet, whenever we talk about the working class and their culture, we label them as xenophobes and ignorant and uneducated. And you're not doing that. No, but that's what needs to change. We need to have a culture change where more people like you will have empathy towards these people instead of just write them off. And I think...
Yeah, I just write off the OAPs.
Well, that's really fair enough, but I think the fact that we have written off the working class for so long has brought us to this juncture, and I think that's really what needs to change.
I agree, but all of... Yeah, I mean, you made the point earlier, I'm going to make the same retort. All of that was true after Ed Miliband failed to get elected and Labour... Labour did precisely fuck all.
Yeah, but
they took a sharp veer left, but to the wrong kind of left.
Yeah, exactly.
To exactly the kind of left that doesn't represent
the working class. They jumped straight into insularity.
Can we actually talk about what the future of Jeremy Corbyn is?
Can we talk about all, like, the four main parties
that
are getting affected by this? Can we not talk about Farage?
Can we please talk about Farage?
Farage is smug as fuck. Moving on.
I mean, you would be if you'd worked for something for 20 years and then you achieved it.
He's going to be a fucking lord now, isn't he? So, that's UKIP. They're very happy. The Conservatives.
Do you expect Nigel Farage and UKIP to run in the upcoming general election that we assume is going to happen by the end of this year? And do you expect them to win any seats?
No.
You don't expect them to run?
Maybe no more than like two or three.
Carswell wants him out, doesn't he? Carswell has kind of publicly said that he's not interested in Farage as UKIP leader anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, that's been the position of Douglas Carswell
forever.
Yeah, UKIP's only MP. So you don't think they'll make any gains in the subsequent election then?
No.
Why not?
Because the general election is very different. A vote for Brexit was not a vote for UKIP, and I think you're an example of that.
That's true. But you said that...
And also, I think that now, actually, their vote might go down, because their unique selling point of, let's get out of the EU, is now...
Yeah, they're gone. They're irrelevant now, in that sense.
But what they do is represent a working class, or make the working class feel like they're being represented a lot better than the other mainstream parties.
Okay, to turn back to Labour, what's the future of Jeremy Corbyn, given that half of his cabinet...
Get him out, Jess Phillips in.
Jess Phillips?
I fucking love Jess Phillips.
She's a fucking crank.
Oh, yeah, she's great, though. That's exactly what we need. And she's working class and a woman, she's ballsy, she's got no... So, something that really depresses me as an Englishman is the calibre of politicians that we have in Westminster, because they never say what they think. They speak in sound bites, and none of them feel like actually real people. What really depresses me whenever I look at Scotland is how amazing every single politician is up there.
Are they?
I think Nicola Sturgeon does a fantastic job, doesn't mince her words, says exactly what she thinks. Ruth Davidson is bloody stern.
I mean, Sturgeon's a bit of a mincer, really.
I don't like her at all. I've passionately not like. I didn't.
I have a huge amount of respect for her, and I disagree. disagree with her on an awful lot of things. I disagree with Ruth Davidson on an awful lot of things, but I think she's a fantastic and honourable politician. And Kezia Dugdale is a nightmare. She also represents all of the problems with the Labour Party. But then we have, what's his name, Willie Rennie from the Lib Dems, who is generally widely liked as a human being. Like, I'm so depressed at the lack of calibre of...
But actually, the Scottish
Jess Phillips is exactly what Westminster needs.
I'm not sure she is. I mean, she's a fucking liar.
I'd say chooker. He'll never do it, but oh my God, I'd love to...
Make him sound like a train.
He would be, though. He would. He would be the Labour Party's Obama. He would be so fucking popular. I've never seen him on TV and not thought you're winning this debate.
I was at the Channel 4 last debate on Wednesday night, the night before Brexit, and Chuka was a couple of rows in front of me. He's very shiny.
His head.
Mm-hmm.
Does he polish it?
No hair above the neck. He's so articulate and sharp, and he manages to speak such a diverse range of people.
But represents the Labour that is the problem.
What he said was really interesting. Why do you think Chuka
It's obvious he's part of the Metro Left. I mean, he's almost the definition of Metro Left. Like the guy, but it's just obvious why Jezza would say something like that.
I think he has a lot of credit with the...
We high-fived.
I think he has a lot of pull with working class people.
What world are you
admittedly, I'm...
So you've got a section of the Labour Party that have switched to UKIP, which isn't known as the party that is sympathetic to non-white people, should we say. And your proposal is to bring a non-white candidate people back on the side.
A non-white candidate with what would be described as a funny-sounding name.
Yeah, when you put it that way, I sound really stupid.
Whereas Jess Phillips looks like the girl that comes over for the Sunday barbecue when you ask
Paul Street. What about that? What's her name? Is it Sarah Champion?
I thought she... Is she Labour?
I have absolutely no idea who you're talking about.
The one who's got, like, a...
I know,
grey hair.
So there's something quite technical. I don't think any of us are going to know this, but in order that basically there's going to be a vote of no confidence almost definitely in the next couple of days for Corbyn's leadership.
And that's among the MPs
who already dislike him quite a lot. Yeah. It's gotten to the point now because if enough people resign from his shadow cabinet, he's not actually going to have enough allies to form a full shadow cabinet, which is enough to have a vote of no confidence. Hmm. There is argument within the Corbyn camp that he should automatically be on any new ballot because the chances of him getting enough backers from the Parliamentary Labour Party, from his fellow Labour MPs, is incredibly low after the shit show that we've had over the past year or so.
So he needs 35 MPs to be nominated.
And he barely scraped above that last time.
Yeah.
And many people have said that they regretted their choice of giving him their vote afterwards. What do you... do you think that he's going to be automatically put onto the ballot?
As I understand it, this is a technical legal point that is in dispute between the Blairites and the Corbynites, and it will probably have to be resolved by a court of arbitration, ultimately, because it's not clear in the Labour constitution.
Regardless, do you think that Jeremy Corbyn can and will continue on as leader? And then later you can tell me if he should.
I think until they resolve that point, it's pretty hard to say because, as you say, if he gets automatic like enrolment, he'll be re-elected because he'll as far as I'm aware, he's still really popular among the Labour general membership. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't get back on, he won't get nominated, and no other Corbyn-esque candidate will be nominated. Mm-hmm. But that then leaves Labour in a very difficult position because it means that they can put up whoever they like, and the membership will be like, well, we don't like any of your candidates. We want a Jeremy Corbyn-like candidate because that's who we voted for last time. Mm-hmm. I think the only future for Labour, the Labour Parliamentary Party, in serious terms, the best option for them at this point is probably to go join the Lib Dems. Because
So let's talk about what the Lib Dems are doing now. What are the Lib Dems doing?
So Tim Farron has said that he will campaign in the next general election on an explicitly remain in the EU platform. He said he respects the referendum vote, although I'm not entirely sure what he means by that.
So you're no longer a member of the Lib Dems, are you? Representative of the Lib Dems. When Farron tweeted that out this morning, I was like, democracy happened, mate. We lost. I don't think that the vote should be ignored. What I think, and I was telling you this earlier, Jimmy, what I think is on the cards is once we have the two-year negotiation, and if the negotiation is shit, which is probably going to be the case because the last thing that France wants is to put fuel on the fire for Le Pen and the Front National in France. If the general public sees that as unfavourable and there's enough of a movement to say, no, we don't want this, we want to remain a member, then there is a case to either cancel the exit from the European Union, or the other case that the Lib Dems could take is long-term and eventual re-entry.
I think the long-term thing is more plausible because, so far as I'm aware, once Article 50 is invoked, which is the article...
Do we know if it can be revoked once it's...
This is my point. Legally speaking, you can't... There's nothing in the text that suggests you can revoke it once it has been invoked.
Is there anything that suggests that it cannot be revoked?
No, but I think it would require some kind of legal shenanigans from the EU Council or the EU machinery, if you like. So it would be something that you'd have to actually approach Brussels and say, we want to change this. Mm. And that gives, I think that would give Brussels significant leverage over us, which would potentially be quite bad.
Mm-hmm. And also the fact that we have a two-year, we have a deadline, and that always is favourable to the person who holds all of the cards, and that in this case is the EU.
Although interestingly, you can do somebody on the Andrew Marsh show was saying you can do all of the negotiations that would be bound up in Article 50 before invoking Article 50, and then the deadline is.
So that is true, but there'll be significant butthurt in Brussels if you try.
Juncker has already said that we should trigger Article 50 now to avoid any more speculation. Not going to happen. Not Merkel has actually come out and supported not Russian. Yeah.
So there you go.
So do you think that this is the thing that the Lib Dems fight back on? It's being called the Lib Dem fight back. #WeAreThe 48%.
I think it depends really what happens to Labour. If Labour undergo a total fucking meltdown, and as I said, I actually think it makes sense for Blairites to actually join the Lib Dems. Ideologically, there's not a huge gap between them. They still get access to all of the Lib Dem campaigning machinery and some of the investment. They can potentially bring some donors on board with them as well.
David Lammy has also, the Labour MP for Tottenham, has already said that he would back Parliament blocking Brexit.
I mean, I don't really approve of that.
I also don't approve.
But I think it is that's the most plausible thing, because I think the situation for the Labour, the anti-Corbyn Labour MPs, is impossible within Labour. I think they have to leave, really.
Is it plausible, though? Because it requires one person who's going to be brave enough to defect. I'm sure once one has gone,
they're already organising as a bloc. There's already at least 50 MPs who decided, fuck it, we want Corbyn out. If you can get those MPs, and I'm assuming there's a few ringleaders among them, and, say Hilary Benn says, look, guys... he'd be an unlikely candidate to say this.
He's already ruled out running as leader.
Yeah, but you get some sort of ringleader who says to the MPs, look, it makes far more sense to form some sort of pact. You don't even have to merge the two parties, but form some sort of alliance with the Lib Dems and then go into the next general election on a non-Corbyn platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously very complicated and it's a bit of a...
I was thinking the only way it would make sense is if they changed to being Lib Dem MPs, which obviously would then trigger...
But they could do that. There's nothing stopping them from doing that.
There's already kind of subsidiary of the Labour Party with the Labour Cooperative. So you could end up with a Labour Liberal kind of tier of the Labour Party, perhaps.
Yeah.
And they might elect their own leader, which is kind of... manages that section of the Labour Party. Or a similar thing could happen, but more with a Lib Dem shift. Finally, Conservatives. Were you expecting David Cameron to step down?
No, I didn't think he would. That was maybe stupid on my part, but it did kind of surprise me.
What do you think the consequences are of that for the country as a whole, not talking about the potential new Prime Minister?
Well, he's going to stay on for 3 months, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Just before the...
He's planning.
He said that.
Planning on the October Tory conference to be...
Will he last that long?
He has to.
Is he going to... Well, seriously speaking, Well, okay, say he steps down, who's deputy PM at this point?
Oh, it's Osborne.
It's Osborne, so Osborne continues running the country until a new Tory leader's elected, so what?
He's a placeholder at the moment.
Yeah.
He won't do anything for the next 3 months, so it's almost irrelevant.
Probably go on holiday to Ibiza again.
But do you not
DVD
think,
day can get back
do you not think
the
there will be mounting pressure on him to say, look, Article 50 needs to be invoked?
No, he's explicitly said that he won't invoke it.
That's my point. I know he has said that he won't invoke it, but we're already hearing from Europe yesterday and this weekend that they want Article...
Juncker is particularly outspoken.
Yeah.
I don't think Juncker necessarily...
But let's hypothetically say that pressure does
build. Merkel's happy not for us, not to invoke it immediately. Merkel is more powerful than Juncker.
Admittedly. But let's say Juncker gains some momentum and there is more and more pressure
You're talking about a fairy tale.
Juncker is a cunt and he can kiss my ass. It makes absolutely no difference what he thinks at this stage. Merkel's already said, just leave them to sort out what the fuck's going on in their own country, then it will be invoked. That's what will happen.
It wouldn't surprise me.
So, leadership contest. Boris Johnson, odds on favourite. Theresa May, probably going to be running.
Tim Montgomery, the Tory commentator, former staffer, said on the Andrew Marr show today that the Tories usually don't pick the front runner in any election contest. So, and a lot of Tories have said that they're going to take Boris out of the game, smear him in the press, and I'm sure the press will enjoy that because, you know, that's exactly...
Sell papers with Bogan.
Exactly.
Do you think that makes it easier for somebody like Theresa May, or do you think that Theresa May is also too much of a front runner?
I think Theresa May's got a good chance, and she's not done anything particularly stupid.
She's played it very well.
I mean, apart from the stupid Chancellor, which obviously is stupid, but the Tories love a bit of that. So, so no worries on that front. But, yeah, I think she's a pretty good candidate.
I watched the Andrew Marr show as well with Montgomery suggesting that it's usually a smaller name. Can you think of any smaller names who might be throwing themselves in the ring?
So you've got
throwing their hat in.
Nicky Morgan, the education secretary.
I've heard whisperings of that before and I'm like,
no.
What? she looks like there's a really funny thing that dead ringers do. She gets introduced and it's like, hi, I'm Nicky Morgan, substitute teacher, stuck in a tornado. She also looks a little bit like a Moomin.
Yeah.
There's a rumour that Gove is thinking of...
I think he'd back Boris.
Yeah, but with a view to having some sort of position in.
Yeah, he'd be Chancellor.
Which I think would actually really hurt Boris.
So aside from the main guys, Stephen Crabb, who I think is the Welsh secretary?
No, he's the Department of Work and Pensions, I think.
Oh, okay.
He replaced IDS.
Yeah, that's right. Andrea Leadsom, who, so far, the only context I've really heard her in is involved in some sort of shenanigans with expenses or something like that. She appears in Private Eye quite regularly in the Rotten Boroughs section and similar. Liam Fox, who's the kind of...
Yeah, he didn't rule himself out this morning on telly.
Liam Fox is like a crazy right-winger, isn't he? Some of it. Jeremy Hunt, if you can believe it.
To be fair, that's the limitless direction that his career keeps on going. He keeps fucking up and getting a promotion. Maybe he will.
Yeah. I'm reading from Guido Fawkes at the moment. George Osborne is suggested, but he seems pretty much out of the game at this point, doesn't he? I think realistically it's going to be a Boris Theresa contest.
Can I do one of my characteristic predictions?
Do you really want to?
I did this with the referendum.
I don't endorse this.
I think I should do another prediction now. So, I think the way the next 12 months are going to play out, Bojo by October, Bojo triggers election, Bojo wins, Bojo increases Conservative majority because Labour will be in chaos. 5 years of Bojo starting 2017. I think Brexit could go very horribly, but it will go through nonetheless, and we will have a recession probably that lasts about 7 years.
That's a very specific timeline for a recession.
I didn't agree with any of that until we got to Brexit will go really badly and we'll have a big recession.
So you don't think Boris Johnson will be Prime Minister then?
No, I don't.
Really?
Because bearing in mind, despite the fact that he's very popular nationally,
yeah.
The people who are going to be choosing our next Prime Minister are 150,000 Conservative Party members, and they are nutty as fuck. And they are going to be split about whether or not they want Bojo to be Prime Minister. He's not hugely popular within the Conservative Party.
No, he's not very, very popular among MPs. He is popular among the membership, and also Leave...
Is he?
Yes, he is. And also Leave is a very popular vote among the Tory membership. Yeah. I'd say on those two factors you mentioned, he's a fucking shoo-in for the Tory.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. He manages to get people to vote.
That's the very reason that he campaigned for Leave in the first place. I mean, I think he obviously could have gone either way on it. He decided to vote to campaign for Leave because he thought it would boost his support within the Tory party.
Indeed, he penned two articles, didn't he? One for Remain and one for Leave, and he sort of confirmed that in an interview on Friday.
Well, he's been widely known as vacillating on the European question for years, so, yeah.
Mm. Right.
Is that everything?
Yeah, that's everything. Ladies and gentlemen, commiserations to all of our listeners.
There's no blood. Why did I come? There's no blood.
Share this podcast around. Heal our wounds together. Leave us a review on iTunes because that always helps us to,
do things,
get found. And also, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter. We're at Right Dishonour, or go to our website where you can leave us comments on each of the episodes. RightDishonourable.com. I've been Jazza.
I've been Jimmy.
I've been John.
And we're gonna fuck off now. I've got a family barbecue to go to. Bye bye.